In 1976, as America celebrated its bicentennial, Alex Haley unleashed a literary hurricane that forced the nation to confront slavery's human cost through one family's extraordinary journey. Roots wasn't merely a bestseller. It became a cultural phenomenon that drew 130 million television viewers and sparked America's genealogical obsession. Before 23andMe or Ancestry.com existed, Haley posed a question that would eventually build billion-dollar businesses. Who are we, and where did we come from? The answer, for Haley, began in a West African forest in 1767, where a 17-year-old's life changed forever. Imagine being violently torn from everything you've ever known, your family, your culture, your very identity erased in a single moment. This was Kunta Kinte's reality. His story reveals how human dignity can persist through unimaginable suffering, and how cultural memory can survive across generations despite systematic attempts to erase it. Through seven generations, this family preserved not just names and dates, but something far more precious, a sense of who they were before chains and whips tried to define them. 17-year-old Kunta Kinte was gathering wood near his Gambian village when his life changed forever. A proud Mandinka youth who had completed manhood training, his days revolved around prayer, Quranic school, and learning his people's oral histories. That spring morning, while examining branches for drum making, Kunta was ambushed by white men, Tubab, and their African collaborators. Despite resistance, he awoke chained in the putrid hold of a slave ship bound for America. The three-month middle passage was hellish. Hundreds of captives packed in suffocating rows amid human waste, with disease claiming countless lives. Through whispers, Kunta discovered most prisoners were Mandinka like himself, forming a brotherhood that transcended tribal differences. In Annapolis, Maryland, Kunta was sold to a plantation owner. After four escape attempts, his captors forced an impossible choice: castration or foot amputation. The overseer's axe took half his right foot, ensuring he could never run again, but failing to break his spirit. After his amputation, Kunta was sold to Dr. William Waller as a buggy driver. Though resistant, he formed connections with fellow slaves, particularly Bell, the head cook who ran the household with quiet authority. Kunta maintained his Muslim faith while reluctantly learning English for survival. Bell's secret literacy gave her unique insights into the white world. Though Kunta initially rejected all things American, he grew drawn to her wisdom and independence. Their jumping the broom wedding ceremony balanced his African heritage with his new circumstances. At 39, Kunta experienced fatherhood when Bell gave birth to their daughter. Following Mandinka tradition, he named her Kizzy, meaning "you stay put," a protective charm against family separation. Bell worried about these customs, but allowed him to share his heritage. This peace shattered when 16-year-old Kizzy was caught helping a slave escape with a forged travel pass. Despite Bell's pleas, Kizzy was sold immediately. Watching his daughter carried away, Kunta destroyed the gourd containing 662 pebbles, each marking a month of his American captivity. Kizzy arrived at Tom Lee's North Carolina farm, where she endured abuse that resulted in her son George's birth. Despite hardships, she preserved her heritage, teaching George Mandinka words and stories about Kunta Kinte, tall and black as the night, proud as any king. George grew into a charismatic young man with exceptional abilities. At 12, he apprenticed under Mingo, the gamecock trainer, developing innovative methods that brought consistent success. His achievements earned him the name Chicken George, along with privileges, competition earnings, distinctive clothing, and travel opportunities. At 20, George married Matilda, a devout woman from a nearby plantation. They raised 8 children while George saved to secure his family's freedom. These dreams collapsed when Massa Lee's gambling addiction led him to wager George's services to an English gentleman after losing a high-stakes cockfight. George's temporary arrangement stretched to 4 years. During his absence, Lee sold Matilda and their children to another plantation, and Kizzy died without seeing her son again. With his father gone, Tom Murray became the family patriarch. A skilled blacksmith earning substantial income, Tom maintained dignity despite daily indignities. During the Civil War, his expertise became essential, forcing him to shoe Confederate cavalry horses at a military camp. George Johnson, a poor white overseer who worked alongside slaves with unusual respect, became an unexpected ally. Their relationship deepened when Johnson's wife lost their infant and the Murray women cared for her. This shared tragedy formed bonds that transcended racial boundaries. When news of Lee's surrender reached the plantation in April 1865, slaves joined celebrations along the main road. Their jubilation turned to mourning days later upon Lincoln's assassination. In May, Massa Murray formally announced their emancipation, offering them the option to stay as sharecroppers. After years of separation, Chick and George returned with news of promising land in western Tennessee. 28 wagons of extended family made the journey, including George Johnson and his wife, who asked to join the only people they considered family. Their destination, a modest clearing with weathered wooden storefronts, initially dampened spirits. Yet doubt quickly turned to hope as they discovered the land's exceptional fertility. With determination, they cleared stumps, built cabins, and prepared fields. When Tom tried establishing himself as a blacksmith, he faced harsh post-emancipation racism. Local white townsmen insisted African Americans could only practice trades while working for white owners. Rather than accepting this limitation, Tom converted their wagon into a mobile blacksmith shop, providing services throughout the countryside. By 1874, the community had flourished despite numerous obstacles. Well-built homes dotted their land, productive farms stretched across cleared fields, and the New Hope Colored Methodist Episcopal Church stood as a symbol of their spiritual freedom and community strength. The family's prosperity continued through generations. Tom's daughter Cynthia married Will Palmer, who built Western Tennessee's first black-owned lumber company. Their daughter Bertha pursued higher education when few African-American women attended college, later marrying Simon Alexander Haley, a WWY veteran and Cornell University student. Born in 1921, Alexander Murray Palmer Haley grew up in Tennessee, hearing elderly relatives share their family narrative on his grandparents' porch. These stories centered on the African, Kunta Kinte, who refused the slave name Toby. They detailed his capture while gathering wood, his escape attempts resulting in partial foot amputation, and his determination to maintain his faith and teach his daughter her heritage. These oral histories served as a lifeline to the family's African origins, surviving slavery's erasure attempts. Inspired, Haley became a journalist and genealogist. His 12-year quest led him to London, where he found records of the Lord Ligonier sailing from Gambia in 1767. In Virginia, he discovered a deed transferring Toby to William Waller. In the Gambia, a griot recounted the story of Kunta Kinte, who vanished while chopping wood in 1767. Through seven generations, this family preserved not just names, but identity and dignity, showing that history lives in our stories and cultural memory endures when tended, even through humanity's darkest chapters.